realize that one day. You dare me? I dare you to dare me.
What do you reckon?
Hippies. That's what I reckon.
The boys take a wrong turn.
I could tell she liked me.
What?
She'd look at me with that special look.
How does it feel when it's that serious?
It's not about the thoughts in your head. It's about surrender. Surrender is what frees you up to be completely in the moment. To commit with your body and your soul. Not a shred of doubt.
Oh, hi, Simon. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, mate.
Very, very good. Well, we'll get right into it. Apparently you had a premiere at the Gold Coast Film Festival last night. How did that go?
Yeah, we had Queensland. It seemed to go pretty well. You know, things are always a little bit heightened for me, so my ability to analyse how well things went is not that great. But it seemed to go pretty well. People stuck around and for the Q&A, and they seemed, you know, obviously they were very forthcoming with praise to me, but I don't think people are going to stop me and say that film sucked. So again, I'm not really sure how accurate my analysis is.
Well, did you sort of feel it maybe was a little different to how it was received at, say, Toronto or Zurich?
It was actually received quite well in Zurich, surprisingly, because I was very intrigued by it. Was subtitled in German, and you know, they're a landlocked country, but you know, it's really, I think people identify with the idea of the themes of identity and fear and sort of you know, figuring out who you are in relation to your parents and your peers and your mentors. So I think that came across, and you know, they have the mountains, they don't have the ocean, but they have the mountains, so there's a similar kind of with that. In Toronto, it was very hard for me in Toronto because it was the first public screening at the Toronto Film Festival. So my experience of it was just, you know, just all about sweaty palms and shifting in my seat constantly, and being worried that the sound wasn't at the right volume and all of those things. So that was an out-of-body experience. I couldn't really tell you how the film played at all at that one.
Well, because this is your first feature film, which is it's a huge mm-hmm. deal, obviously. What have you found was different, say, about directing this than when you directed for your television series, The Mentalist?
Oh, well, it's just, you know, when I direct for The Mentalist, it's a 10-day, you know, it's an eight-day shooting period. I have a sort of a 7-day prep period, and then I cut it in 3 days. Whereas this one is, you know, I had 8 weeks of official prep, I had 6 weeks of shooting, and I cut it over 14, 15 weeks. And then you go into, you know, the nitty gritty of sound design and, you know, color grading and sound mixing and final mixing. You know, so it's a very different animal. It's far more detailed and far more intense and really, there's more control over the different elements to be had because you're making it for the cinema.
Well,
have you seen it?
I have, yes. It was, yeah, I definitely have. I saw it about 3 days ago and I, notice that your surfing sequences seem complex. You must have spent weeks and weeks directing from a boat. Is that what you were doing? Or?
From the water, mate. From a boat.
Really?
In the water.
Were you always in the water? Wow.
Yeah. On a jet ski, or I was in all of the scenes, most of the scenes. So it was not, yeah. So no, it was not. We didn't have a budget to have we had a boat for a couple of days that, basically, the first AD stayed on and that we could go and get dry on, and then we would jump back in. But the boat was really, you had to keep it out of the way. But a lot of the surfing sequences, it's, you know, shooting on water is incredibly difficult, and the ratio of usable footage is pretty slim. So a lot of it is about post-production and putting it together in the order in which you put it together. and being flexible with the narrative based on the footage that you have. There's an element of found footage cutting, you know, almost like documentary making when you're doing that. But you know, I've grown up surfing, so I wanted to feel authentic.
Well, I read that you're an avid surfer. Was there anything that you knew you had to learn to surf like Sando?
No, not really. It wasn't really about learning that stuff. It was just keeping everything within the parameters of authentic for me. You know, also, you know, I've done a lot of research over the years. I've always been into the evolution of the sport, the evolution of the aesthetics related to the sport, the art associated with the sport. You know, I don't look at it as a sport, really. I look at it as a sort of a lifestyle more than anything. It's more of a sport now. It's, you know, one, there's an aspect of it that is commercialized as a sport.
So in that sort of way, were you keeping an eye on the authenticity of the sort of time period that this was going on in?
All of it. That's your job as a director, is to keep an eye on all of it, all of that. So anything in the dressing and the set that wasn't, that distracted from, that was of the period that distracted you from the story was gone. All as much detail as possible without it being glaringly obvious. And that's what your job is as a director, is to oversee all of that stuff. So yes, keeping an eye on all of it. That's the joy of it, is that you know, you're the first and last line of defense. So if something slips through, it's your fault.
Yeah. Well, I guess when you were reading Tim Winter's book originally, how much overlap did you feel there was with your own childhood in Australia?
A massive amount of overlap, but I don't think I was alone on that. I think there was a lot of people that felt that were affected by that for the same reason. And I think what was also interesting about Tim's work is that in this particular book is that it also appealed to people that hadn't grown up on the coast. It took people, it took landlubbers and plonked them out in the ocean and made them feel like they'd experienced it, which I think it was the best piece of literature I've ever read describing the experience of being in the ocean as a surfer. And I think surfers felt that for sure across the board.
Well, you're certainly trying to replicate that with the film, because I, not being a surfer myself, I certainly thought, wow, you've really put us in the water. Was Tim Winton always going to be the narrator of the film?
No. No. I had no idea who the narrator was going to be. I did know that I wanted a very... I didn't really want a sort of movie voiceover feel. I wanted I just wanted like a vox pop, like someone sitting down in their living room telling a story and just taking snippets of it. I wanted a very normal kind of ordinary voice, and that felt authentic. I didn't want the sort of you know, that sort of silky voiceover sound that a lot of Hollywood films have. And Tim visited the set at the beginning. We just started shooting, and he was leaving, and he said, look, give me a call if you need anything, you know. And I said, listen, mate, I've got this voiceover stuff. I was just wondering, just as an idea, because I kind of just want to find a regular person to record this voiceover. But I was wondering if you could, I was thinking the other night, put it down for me. And he's like, oh, I don't know, oh, okay. And he recorded it into his phone, and I cut the film to his recordings on from his mobile phone.
Wow.
That he'd sent through to me. And then I just fell in love with how kind of normal it was and how unforced it felt. And then I hired, you know, then I got an actor to re-record it. And as is with voiceover, you really have to play around and look at it to know if it feels right. And the actor did a wonderful job, but it wasn't necessarily... I missed Tim's voice. I missed the ordinariness of Tim's voice and no, his words. And I thought, fuck, why not? So I called him up and said, mate, I want to stay with yours, but I need to come over to WA and record it a little bit better because it's pretty shitty, the mobile phone, the cell phone recording of it. So he was like, okay, mate. At that point, he'd seen the film and he was like, okay, sure. And we got through that.
Yeah, it was a great decision. I the moment I heard it, I thought, oh, I wonder if that's Tim Winton, because it had that quality that you're talking about.
Yeah, there's just a real everyman quality to his voice that just felt real.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely. You cast Richard Roxburgh, another actor-director. Did he have any advice for you?
No, he didn't. No. Richard was not. I think it would have been weird if Richard had started trying to give me advice. He's not that kind of guy. He's more of a, you know, I think he was very, I think he really liked the material and he's very professional. And he didn't work that much, but he was, you know, around a little bit.
No, it's a great choice as the dad. Certainly he makes an impression, as always.
It was very different, but actually, you know, if you look at Richard's work, that performance is a very different performance than you've ever seen him give before. He's not often that still, and that he's a very technical actor, and often he's very busy, and so it's nice. I really love seeing him be really understated.
In fact,
I think it has a bit more poke. What's that?
Sorry to interrupt. I was just saying it's actually quite interesting that it was Richard Roxburgh and Rachel Blake as the parents, because of course that's really not her kind of role usually either. So
no, and they were both. It was so, you know, Richard's sort of the silence of Richard was really, I thought was really that character was really nice. He's just not normally a guy. He's normally a guy that gets cast more in the more verbose characters that are, you know, that talk a lot and are very active. And it was nice to see him in a more passive role that had gravitas to it.
Because you're the only actor who can't speak to the director, is there something extra that you have to do to direct your own performance?
No, not really. No, because I think a lot of actors don't. Sometimes I think if the casting's right, the actor sort of gets it, you know. Yeah, I think sometimes with actors, it's what you don't say to them is what works. Sometimes you can fill them with too many thoughts, and every actor is different. They're all individuals. But no, I prefer directing, and it was a nice relief when I didn't have to act anymore. And direct, because, you know, I think as a director you have to kind of play all the roles to a degree in your head or in your heart or go along with them. At least you have to have empathy for all the characters as a director.
Right. So are you planning on directing another feature now that you've completed this one?
I don't have hard plans at this point, but, you know, I'm very interested in working more as a director. I want to have a rest after this. It takes a lot out of you.
Thanks very much for talking to us about Breath, Simon Baker. We really appreciate the time that you've spent doing this.
Thanks, Phil.
All right.
Cheers, mate.
You're different, Baker. You've got this look. Like you're expecting to lose something.
Fear's only natural, mate. People face down fears every day. Daring to try, that's mankind for you.
I don't know if I'm feeling it.
You're a coward.
I thought I brought men above the ordinary.
Being scared's half the fun. You should know that by now.
Why don't you let him go?
He needs it.
What about what you need?
I'm gonna be dirty about that.
What are you talking about?
Oh, nothing. It's gossip.
Don't want you to think I don't notice these things.
What?
Well, I think you know what I'm talking about.
You're right here, Pikelet. You're right here, right now. You got this, mate. You got this.